This is season two of the JP Talker Show. It has been a long time since the last one, and so I've decided to start again. Today's guest is Daniel Flynn from Thank You. He's a huge inspiration, and I can admit that, you know, he really was a driving force for me getting the podcast back up and running again. His story is so amazing. It's so special, and I think it's something that's going to energize you, and hopefully you're going to get behind and help Daniel do some really good, not only for New Zealand, but also, I think, for humankind altogether. So please enjoy. We'll say this is episode 17, but this is season two. The JP Talker Show is back. Please enjoy Daniel Flynn.
Welcome to the JP Talker Show.
All right, I'll kick off by welcoming Daniel Flynn to the JP Talker Show. It is it's taking a little while, mate, but I am very proud to have you on. Welcome.
Hey, it's so good to be here, and yeah, man, thank you so much.
Dude, look, my backstory when it comes to Thank You and what you've done is your book was recommended to me by a really good friend, Jared Robinson, who himself is a well-accomplished footy player and spent a lot of time in Australia. And I read it and thought, man, this guy is – I wrote you down on my wish list of people to interview on my podcast. Next thing I know, you're speaking at the Institute of Directors in Wellington. I'm like, wow, this is cool. I'm gonna go see this guy talk. He spoke absolutely passionately, and I was really captivated, and just took an opportunity to try and see if I could nab you. And so, look, from there, you've just launched Thank You in New Zealand.
Probably, yeah, man.
4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think we're coming into our fifth week. Someone told me, which is scaring me, but we're going really well.
Okay, and so how you? So you've got what, 10 to 13 weeks to sort of really hit the market and reach saturation?
Yeah, so 13 weeks is kind of the rough rule of thumb in the FMCG industry. It's kind of like you've got to hit a really strong sales rating and sales levels in store. Otherwise, the conversation becomes, it's not working, you need to get out, or what are you going to do to grow? So we've lost products in Australia before. Like, we now have 55 products on the market, but we would have lost a whole heap of product just because we didn't hit the hurdle rates. So we're aware that, you know, it's a competitive market. But I mean, our whole team have been so humbled by the way so many Kiwis have backed this and promoted it, and just it's an amazing country.
Why do you think New Zealand has really jumped on board with Thank You?
You know, I started traveling over here literally 2 years ago when we were first looking at launching, and New Zealand's a really big deal for us because it's the first country outside of Australia to launch Thank You, and I had this ridiculous opportunity November last year, I think, was at a conference, and I got randomly picked out of the audience to do an interview with President Obama on a live stream for 25 minutes, and like he picked three young people from around the world and he interviews us, and like we were all so nervous and it was like a lifetime opportunity, like I'll never forget it. But he asked this question: when's Thank You launching, you know, in other countries? He's like, this should be global. This could be in America. I'm like, I know. But right now we're launching in New Zealand. And New Zealand really is proving that this idea can work in another market. Not that, it, you know, yeah, sure, we were born in Australia. We started there. But we really want this to be global. And I think New Zealand, from what I've learned over the last few years traveling here, you guys are really open to A, making a difference, B, batting above your weight globally. And I think you guys, in, you know, from business to sport to entertainment, are always thinking about, well, how do we make something work well here, but also on a global playing field? And I don't know if that's just because it's a small country, so you've always got to think about, well, how do we stack up in other markets and how do we take things further than just New Zealand? But I think there's a real global view here, certainly in the different people we've met, and that's been really exciting.
Do you think the element of the underdog has sort of struck a chord with us Kiwis as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, you can probably answer that better than me, but I think the fact that we are an underdog, that we are this little idea, a little social enterprise up against some of the world's most well-known and kind of fierce competitors in business, like that is the David Goliath story. And on paper, we shouldn't win. You know, our hand washer has been ranked number one in Australian supermarkets for like the last 3 years, and it's held that position. And on paper, no, like, how does that even work? But, yeah. But I think consumers are like, well, okay, you guys have made a really good product. All the profit goes to making a difference, helping people around the world. It's a no-brainer, and people have campaigned, people have supported, and I think it's, you know, thank you taps into the part of all of us that thinks, yeah, let's change the system, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I guess that, look, we'll sort of spin or turn the clock back a little bit, but look, for me, I guess it really resonated when I read the book, and because you're giving people to actually like make a difference or make a change that is, you know, as you'll learn it, well, people will learn if they get involved with thank you. But God, if you've been following me on social media, you should know what thank you is. But you can actually track and see where your dollars are going and the impact it's making. So I think that's probably something us Kiwis quite like, you know, and obviously Australians do as well.
Yeah, you know, I think, and honestly, you may have a better read here, or you would have a better read here than me, but I think there is a natural skepticism in Australia and probably here too. And I think it's healthy. Like, people are naturally a little bit skeptical. Like, everyone's up for making a difference, but also we're all a bit like, yeah, but like, where's the money really going? And like, how do you know? And systems like Track Your Impact for us was going, well, we fund programs. So we'll be funding programs here in New Zealand. That'll be easy for people to understand. But we'll also be funding some developing countries all around the world. That's hard for people to connect with and even know if the money's getting there. So we built our tracker system where once you sign up to our website and enter your code, we'll email you once a project's complete with photo proof and GPS coordinates of the programs, just to try and connect us all better with our impact.
Right, so coming back, so if you don't know your story, and it's a pretty cool one, it was about 2008, decided to sort of give this concept a go. What was, and obviously it started with the bottle, the thank you water.
Yeah.
Was water always the idea, or was that just the easy place to start?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a little bit of both. You know, I was initially first deeply moved by the world water crisis. And I think for me at 19, I just couldn't even comprehend a world without clean water. Like, my little bubble, my little world never had muddy water that I was drinking. So to see other kids not just drink that, but lose their siblings, like watch brothers and sisters die from waterborne disease. And, you know, I found that confronting. And I also found the bottled water industry confronting. Because in 2008, I'm like, and like, I still believe it today, it is the dumbest product on the planet.
Yeah, no doubt.
It doesn't exist, but I actually even think bottled water it's like a mirror, to be honest. It's a mirror on us as a society. And the reflection's a little bit ugly. It's like we throw money into single-use rubbish. We shouldn't be buying it, but sometimes we're too lazy. Yeah. If we're all honest, we don't carry a bottle from home. Anyway, it was such a good starting point because to us it was a little bit controversial. But at the same time, it was like, well, there isn't a bottle of water that gives all the profit to funding water projects. And there just should be. Like, if there's going to be bottled water, the dumb product, and there's going to be a world water crisis, there's got to be one that's a bridge between the two. And that is where we started. And we've evolved massively in now 55 other products. And as you know, we haven't launched bottled water in New Zealand because we just don't think New Zealand needs another bottle of water. And we've evolved a lot as a brand. But, it was a simple starting point. Water for water.
Look at your story. You write a book called Chapter One, which sort of goes into detail about your story. And I don't want to give away too much from that book because if you're listening, you have to buy it. And it's a donation as well, which has basically helped fund your startup costs in New Zealand. Is that right?
Yeah. So the book is Chapter One is the title, and it's sold at a pay what you want price. And all the profit we make funds our global expansion, beginning here in New Zealand. So essentially it's a crowdfunding tool, and we've had Kiwis and Aussies pay everywhere from 5 cents to two Kiwis paid $5,000. In fact, even since you and I caught up, a guy at Sovereign paid $10,000 for a copy, their CEO. And then One lady in Australia has paid $50,000. So you've got people like young and old buying into this idea of helping take this idea further. And we've raised now over $2.4 million from the book to fund the global expansion. And New Zealand is kind of step one. Yep. So it's exciting because it's about a people movement. This isn't about one kid, three kids, yep. You know, Jad and Justin, our other co-founders. It's not even about our team of 55. This is about all of us contributing to take this idea further.
So 2008, though, you weren't 55 people and you had an idea. You didn't have any idea how to market it, get bottles, get water into bottles and what that would look like. Mate, and now you're stocked across, you know, all of Australia and the biggest supermarket chains over there. But, mate, what are some of the challenges that you face trying to break into an industry dominated by, you know, the big guys?
Yeah, you know, I reckon the issue we face, the biggest one, and it's the same issue that nearly anyone faces starting a business. In fact, you know what? Even making any idea you have a reality. And the issue was getting other people to buy into it. Literally, like getting other people to believe it. So for the first 5 years in Australia, we couldn't get the two biggest supermarkets, Coles and Woolworths, to buy into our idea. Like, they'd sit there and listen to it, and they're like, yeah, cool, good cause, cool product, it's niche, you're against the big brands, you don't have the normal money that these big brands pump into their brand, upwards of $3 million. Like, and so we just struggled to get them to buy into it. So that's at a big scale, but even in the early days, we struggled to get people to fund it because we're like, you can't have equity. Like there are no investors. People are like, why would we put money in? We're like, well, because you're backing a new way to do business. You're backing philanthropy and business, social enterprise, you know, like join us. And people are like, join you? Like, what is this? So we did struggle, but I think there's been a lot of things we've done over the years that have sort of shown us, how you can get people to buy in.
Mate, over the years and through that process, you had a lot of setbacks, and reading your book is quite heartbreaking. It's like it's a thriller because you get so close and you're kind of like, yeah, they've done it. And then they're like, oh no, they've just been, the big guys have just cut them in half, or they've underfunded them, or the CEO said, oh, actually, no, the time's not right for us. Or you shipped 100,000 bottles with the label, like all crinkled up.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
How do you keep coming back from those little setbacks of your head?
Yeah, and that, I think that one was about 50,000 bottles with the label. But we had other issues. But it was like, we had, you sum it up really well. And in fact, people who read chapter one, it's almost like, yeah, you know what? A thrill is a great way to put it. I actually think there wouldn't be a book worth reading without all of the crap, all of those low moments. And I think how we kept coming back from them, and we got hit again and again. In fact, our first 3 years, that we get no breakthrough into retail in a big way. We get nowhere. And I think what kept us going was, it sounds cliche, but it was our vision and our purpose. You know, this was bigger than us. It was bigger than a product. This was about helping people. This was about changing the system. This was about a better world. And we were driven by that.
Yeah.
We built in ways to remind ourselves of that.
How did you do that? How did you remind yourself? Because surely you must have had days where I'm out, and then maybe a couple of days later you change your mind.
That happened over and over and over. And you know, they say it's important to be connected to your purpose. So, you know, I think for me these days, like a photo from a trip overseas, back in the day it was, you know, in the early days, it was a couple of trips overseas that really helped. Just like, I remember one, I think it was our first trip I came back from going, if everything we've been through for these last couple of years was for that one family, this was all worth it. Now, you can't get that perspective until you're standing there with a family, hearing about how their life has changed, and you're like, I got to play a small role in that. Yeah, you know, like, it's humbling. You know, and I think for people, like, if you sit out on any journey to change anything, you need to know why you're changing it, and then you need to build in ways to stay connected to that.
It sounds like, and I haven't met your business partners, but you ended up marrying one of them. So she must have done a few things right, and you obviously got along very well. And then, look, Jared's still heavily involved. And it's sort of a dumb question, but just how important are those people that you choose to do business with?
Really, really important. You know, and there are a couple of other people who started with us in chapter one early on the journey, and they were with us for a season and not forever, which we first started, I'm like, nah, we all have to be in this forever. You know, like and then you grow up and you realize, like, actually it's really important that A, you have good people in your life who can call a spade, who can call your blind spot, who can keep you grounded, and also pick you up when you fall over and you're like, I can't do this anymore. You need people who believe in not just what you do, but in who you are. So we've always surrounded ourselves with people like that, some for a season, some for longer. But when I look back over the journey, even people that have come and gone, they've played such a key role in that phase. And now there are different people playing that role. And I've had mentors who were there for a season and some have been there for longer. But it's so important that we don't walk alone. And, you know, I think isolation is probably the greatest killer of dreams and ideas. And you know what? Even people, to get really blunt and brutal, it's like people get isolated. They think they can't make it anymore. And then that's it. And I think as a society, we've got to do a better job at surrounding ourselves with good people, having open and honest, pretty tough conversations, and not walk alone.
Were there a few people that outside of the business that you sort of may have gone to a couple of times and said, I think this is it. Like I've had enough.
Yeah, there was, mentors and my dad and Justine and I forever have had conversations about that's it, I'm done, you know. But it would actually surprise people if you taped a microphone to me and heard some of the conversations that I'd have even recently, even as recent as the end of last year, with some of the people in my life that I've built around me. And their conversations where I'd be sitting there saying things like, man, I feel like such a failure. And like other people would hear that and be like, what? Like you just had an interview with Obama. Yeah, but I'm sitting there afterwards thinking, he asked this question, when are we coming to America? When's this launching in other countries? And we said, oh, we're launching in New Zealand at the moment. And that's a huge step. But like ever since we started, we thought Thank You could be global. We celebrate 10 years this month. And as someone who has vision and is always thinking about the future, like I have struggled with, wow, we really haven't got this in other countries yet. New Zealand's just started and it's taken us 10 years to get this far. And that's where I could be sitting in front of someone going, oh man, I feel like I've failed. And it takes them to kind of go, you're a great guy, smack, like over the face, like come on man, like snap out of it. But I'm sharing that more from the perspective of it doesn't matter how far you get in life, you've got to have people around you who can encourage you, because we have a warped view, and maybe we don't all, maybe it's just me, but we can get this kind of view of other people have got it together, or you know, I meet so many people who are in the limelight, who have success in what many people would define success as, and they feel like a fraud.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm like faking it. I feel like I'm about to fall. I feel like if I get found out, and imposter syndrome is like a really big deal in a lot of public circles because people feel like they're imposters. I've met CEOs who have huge teams and global businesses, and they're like, I just feel like I'm going to get found out. Yeah. I'm like...
That'd be interesting, eh? Especially if someone you sort of subscribe to a little bit, or you look up to, and they sort of confine you a little bit. I guess there's that... I call it, fake it till you make it. But then I guess there are people still faking it in positions that you probably don't even realize, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think... those people that have shared that, actually think it's probably come more out of a, not a space of they're legitimately faking it, but they're just feeling inadequate. And I reckon there's a part of most of us that can wake up some days feeling inadequate. We just feel like, you know, I don't feel like I'm good enough. And I applaud those people willing to talk about it, because I think I've heard them talk like that. And I'm like, oh man, that makes me feel half human. Makes yeah. me feel normal. Right. You know, like I certainly don't have it all together. You know, I feel like we've come so far, and yet I've even personally got so far to grow. But I think, yeah, I'm grateful for people who are willing to open up on that.
But how do you recharge? What's your time out? And it's an outsider's view, right? It just looks like you're on the go 24/7.
So I am on the go nearly 24/7. I would probably say I'm on the go 24/6. So here's a life hack that's been so big. So I take a day, Justin and I do this, a day off a week. So like we have a weekend, but we're always at events and stuff. So often a weekend can get eaten into a little bit, or we're traveling, but we have one day a week, which is a 24-hour block of time where there are no emails, no mention of work. And we work together, we're co-founders, but we do not talk work. And if we were to talk work, we'd be breaking that. And it was almost like a game. And it's got to the point that
is it like a swear jar scenario? Like if you
mention it. Yeah. But like if you said, hey, I'm only available to do this interview on a, like for me, it was yesterday, Sunday. So if you're like, I'm only available Sunday, I would say, no, I'm not available. Yep. Or if it was like, no, man, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. It's the only time we can make it work. I would say yes to if I could move my 24-hour block. Because if we met halfway through it, that breaks it. So that So I would go, yeah, all right, cool, we're on, bro. But I'd need to move it to tomorrow or the next day, which then blocks out a whole bunch of diary stuff. Because it takes your brain so long to switch off. So but every 7 days or every 6 days, I'm having that. And that has become such a big part of sustaining me as a leader. It's not perfect. I mean, last night I worked late. You know, I started work late at night, and you know, I'm really tired from it. So I'm not perfect, but that is one of the things that's been really important.
It must be. It sounds like a bit of a marriage hack as well. It's probably, if my wife, I don't think she even listens to my podcast, but if she ever does, I think she'd probably be thinking that this would be it. No emailing for 24 hours, JP. That'd be one of her tips.
Yeah, man. And like, honestly, there's freedom in it, because it is good for your marriage. It's good for your kids. Like, it's like, you know, I was a speaker once who talked at a conference, and there was a huge anticipation that this guy was going to drop all this gold, and a bunch of delegates left the conference upset because all he spoke on was diary management.
Okay.
And like, people were like, that was so lame. Like, that was so, lame is not a great word, but it was the word I heard. It was so disappointing.
Yeah.
And I actually think the genius of that session was, doesn't matter how successful or busy you get, diary management. Like he was basically proposing, I can tell the state of your relationship by the amount of time in your diary booked away for your wife.
Okay.
And it's like, no. But like, put more preference on a work meeting or an opportunity over a meeting or time with our family. So I found that really confronting, and my diary does look different now. Like this morning it had home time, family time blocked in there. And if, again, you and I wanted to meet, I'd have to cancel my family time. Like, and even the click of cancel, it's like, it actually helps me go, ooh.
Yeah. I've seen your diary. You showed it to me. It is insane. Absolutely insane.
Well, yeah, but it is. But also I have got probably things in my diary that, like, most people don't put family time in the diary. They just go, hey, I don't need to put it in my diary. But that's in there because, you know, life tends to creep over that first.
Yeah. Yeah, and it will be so easy to go home and talk about work. But How do you deal with a situation where perhaps you and Justine don't agree on something work related? Does that creep home, and how do you deal with that or stop that from happening?
Yeah, so like in 10 years, that's never happened.
Holy,
I'm just kidding.
What's about to go? You clocked it.
Nah, we haven't clocked it. It's a challenge, you know, and it's definitely not for everyone. It is. I mean, this is the hard stuff, you know, when to talk about work, when not to. And we've had some really cool setups before where we're like, we'll talk on the way home from work, but as soon as we get in the door or the garage closes, now it's nice. No more talk about work. And there is a difference we've learned between a couple talking about work as a couple versus as colleagues. So like, you know, Justin might be like, man, I'm feeling really crushed at work. Or I'm like, man, I'm really disappointed at this and that. Like, that might be normal. But the moment you go, hey, did you get back to that person? Oi, what about that idea? And what do we, like, and so we would get operational at like midnight on a Friday night in bed. You know, like, that's bad. That's bad. And so we had to build in some really, really strong measures, and we don't always nail it, but I can tell you that rest, that idea of a day off a week has really protected us. And just calling time out on stuff. And when we've disagreed, to your point, you actually have to separate personal from professional, you know, and you have to go, okay, we disagree professionally, and that's good. Because if we agreed on everything, that would be weird. In fact, so many of our disagreements have been where some of the greatest stuff at Thank You's ever come from. For example, launching in New Zealand, I was like, I know we need to get out of bottled water, but we can't launch New Zealand without water. It's our history. She's like, there is no way, as long as I'm brand director, there's no way we are launching water in New Zealand. And we argued on a flight for 3 hours. And at the end of it,
wow,
she won. We since checked that with all of our team and our other amazing marketers and like everyone got involved. But between her and I, it was that disagreement that led to, I think, probably one of the best calls we've made in a long time.
Yeah, interesting one, because you sort of talk about that you sometimes get labeled, like, for example, you do hand soap and it's lovely hand soap, we've got it at home. But people will say, oh, have you got the Thank You Water hand soap? You've become the Xerox, like it's that brand is, it must be hard to shake that.
Yeah, and look, that has happened more in Australia than here in New Zealand, because we've launched with our hand wash and body care range. You know, I think people are like, oh yeah, cool, Thank You does products, but in Australia, or anyone who's followed us from Australia, is like, oh, your Thank You water. And the classic is people are literally like, oh, I use your Thank You water nappies, and you're like, no, you use our Thank You nappies. But that's cool. That's all part of branding. It's all part of life, and we're getting there.
And so so currently we've got the hand wash available. And if you buy the hand wash, what can we expect to see? Or where will we see that perhaps there'll be some funds reinvested back into the New Zealand community?
Yeah, so look, we have a pretty simple formula. So we sell product, we make profit, we give it. We're in the sell product phase because we've launched. So we're realistically not going to be having profit to give until 6 months. And we usually give, we now give annually at Thank You. I think year one, we probably need to be quicker than annually. But once we're in motion, we'll be annually. And we're currently reviewing projects here in New Zealand. So we've met a lot of great charities, a lot of cool submissions. It's really hard early days because honestly, everyone's doing amazing work. And we've only got a little bit of money until this thing becomes really good. So it's this weird thing where you're like, we want to help everyone. I think though, what we are looking for is projects that have the most sustainable impact that is really meaningful. So like, there's a lot of really good programs here in New Zealand that have got a lot of funding. So I suppose even though they're very popular and they're getting a lot of funding, we don't want to just add on to that and be like another little funder. We're looking for holes. We're looking for gaps. We've always looked at that. Thank You. Always, like an example overseas, which is really clean cut, is we funded a country called Burundi, which is next to Kenya. It's the fifth poorest country in the world, and it missed out on funding a lot of funding globally because people are like, where's Burundi?
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. And because people know Kenya, they're like, Kenya, Lion King, Kenya, I get it. Literally because of that reason alone, Kenya has got more funding than Burundi. It's like a branding issue. Thank You has never been afraid of funding. And we've funded Kenya, but also Burundi. So I think here we're looking for meaningful impact that is, you know, might be underfunded. And we really look forward to making those announcements once we've got the partner and we've got funding. Yep.
And do you see a future or pipeline to bring more of the Australian products into the New Zealand market?
Yeah, we do. We do. And I think, you know, we even dream of products that one day come from here or, you know, our entire body care range, which is our number one product range in Australia, just got repackaged. So all of the packaging has been redone by our team and then a branding agency called Marks, which is a Kiwi-based agency.
Yeah, yeah. They're
amazing creatives. And so they've come on board and literally redone all our packaging, both for New Zealand and then right across Australia. So I think there'll be ideas and creative that comes from Aussie, comes from here, that will flow on to hopefully Thank You all around the world one day.
Yeah. You know, New Zealand has got a few unique products. Have you heard of Allbirds, the shoes?
I've got a pair, man. I love them.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. So comfy, warm, like no socks. It's like a dream.
I went to primary school with Tim Brown, actually.
Cool.
Another cool little story, but I was trying to think of some other things that are a little bit unique to New Zealand that you could perhaps take on. I think in the nether parts, we probably have a lot of hemp.
Yeah.
Might be able to utilize that somewhere. I'm not sure, but hey, mate. And so just, so for now for you, so we're really at a crunch time in New Zealand for Thank You.
Yeah.
How do people support you best?
Sure. I mean, it's as big and as little as, like, right now buy the product. And what we're telling people or asking people is to tell two. So like next time you're at New World or Pack and Save or Foursquare, I mean, if Thank You products aren't in there, ask the store manager. But you should be thinking our hand wash, our body wash, our sanitizers and our lotions. Yep. Grab one for two friends and give it to them. We know New Zealand's 2 degrees of separation. People are so connected here. So we're asking people to tell friends, tell family, tell work colleagues. And some people are like, I mean, I'll tell more than two. I'll like email everyone at work or I'll post on social.
Yeah.
Or your brother, man, he's a classic. He does a dance battle in a New World, records it. That video's had like, I don't even know, thousands of views.
Yeah.
Like he's using what's in his hand, his talent and his influence to help tell people. I mean, that right now is absolute gold to us.
Mate, it's funny, you really struck a chord with Julian. He, I told him about you guys and he knew a little bit about the story and it was just fortunate timing that you're launching on Thursday. I was in Auckland for work and Julian was there too doing Dance of the Stars and he sort of came in and he kind of was just, I guess really quickly went, wow, what, this is so simple. Why isn't everyone doing this? Why, you know, he couldn't really work it out why this wasn't a massive thing already. Mm. And his energy that night just completely changed. And he won't probably mind me saying, but you know, he's pretty tired. He'd been really busy. But that his energy within about 15 minutes of turning up to the event just completely changed, man. And whenever I talk to him now, like, he leads with, what's Thank You doing? Have you seen this? What are you doing? Have you spoken to Daniel? You know, like.
Wow, man.
Yeah. And that's so true of so many other people as well. And especially me too. I think you energize a lot of people that's yeah, a lot of people gravitate towards you, right? I think. Do you find that as well?
You know, it's
you don't notice it.
I don't know how to describe it, but I think I've seen. It's funny, man. Like it's weird hearing you say that about me, but I gravitate towards some people. So like Scott Harrison from Charity Water,
yep.
Massive. Like I'm really inspired by the work they've done globally in the charity space. They're completely different to us, but I think there are similarities and I just love their creative and their ability to execute ideas. And so I love Charity Water, but I naturally follow Scott Harrison. I'm interested in what he has to say. Even his wife, Vic, like she's awesome. Like there's just something about the human stories behind the stories that for me, I seem to connect with better than just a logo and the marketing. So I mean, as weird as it is hearing you say what you're saying, I find that true of myself with other people that I follow and I'm inspired by. It just, there's something about the human story that is just, you know.
I think you're an amazing storyteller as well. I spoke to some other people who went to the Institute of Directors in Wellington, hadn't read your book, and I kind of felt like I had, you know, I'd seen the spoiler, you know, like, so I knew how the story was going to end. But like, people are inching towards in their seats, and you could see them getting really excited, and they wanted to get to the end to find out, you know, of the people that didn't know your story. So it's an amazing talent, and I'm really excited for chapter two. But chapter one's still going, and it's still available, and in New Zealand we can get it everywhere, right?
Yeah, well, at the moment, Airport Bookstores, so Relay, yep. New Zealand watermark, and I am shocked, but it is going up the chart. Yeah, in New Zealand, man, it has gone, so I think it's at number 5 in the top 50 reads at the moment. So it, yeah. And I'm watching every, because I fly a lot, I'm like, yeah. Oh man, this thing is growing. Like, people are backing it and they're buying it. You can buy it online, so thankyou.co, just at our website. Check out all of our New Zealand website and team and impact and stuff, but you can buy it there too.
But so explain this, because people might not know this. You can go to the bookshop at the airport, you can pick the book up and walk to the counter, and you can choose how much you want to pay.
Yeah, so they will literally say to you how much you want to pay, and you are, you're kind of left with this awkward moment of, what? Like, no, you tell me how much I should pay. But pay what you want. I love it, because it's a bet on humanity that people are more good than bad. And it's confronting, because it's like, okay, well, I don't know, how much should I value this? And I've met people who are like, to be honest, I thought, actually, I met a kid on Friday, a kid, he was, I'm not sure, maybe the same age, but he was from UK, and the person in front of him bought a book and paid like probably $1, because they're like, this is awesome, I can get a free book nearly. Right. Yep. Even went and grabbed a copy, paid like nearly nothing for it. He read it on the plane the whole way home, couldn't sleep, finished the book, then went back and bought more copies for friends and actually paid a whole bunch more, because he's like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have paid so little for it. So yeah, it's fun. It's just a different way to do things.
Yep. Mate, I know you look pretty tired. Just a couple of quick ones, mate. Do you have, apart from chapter one, which you need to buy, any other like go-to books that you would recommend? Entrepreneurs, people trying to get out of a rut, something that energizes you?
Definitely, man. So Tribes by Seth Godin. Actually, you know what, before that, Tribes is definitely up there. It doesn't quite answer your question of when you're stuck in a rut, but it does. It's a really good marketing book. I think it's a good leadership book. Another book I love is a book called Do Purpose.
Not heard of that. Who's that by?
Such a good question.
I'll find out and I'll chuck it in the show notes.
Yeah, Do Purpose. It's like how to do good with brands, or it's actually a picture book, picture and quotes and words. It's so simple, but every page is so profound, and it's made a great impact on our team. Great leadership book, John C. Maxwell, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. I love that book.
Yeah.
The Purple Cow is another book. This book, it's about just marketing and just standing out, which is relevant to everyone. Doesn't matter if you're marketing or not.
Now, you've met Seth, haven't you?
Oh, man. I met, like, yes.
Have we got time to talk quickly, talk about this?
Yeah, I do, man. And look, honestly, the only reason I look tired is because I am, and I shouldn't be.
It's okay.
I should have better work-life balance, and if my wife ever listens to this, she'd be like, yeah, you look tired. Everyone's saying that. You've got to rest more. So, but Seth, so week 3 of our chapter 1 launch, Seth bought the book.
Wow.
Oh man, talk about.
So how did you know that he bought the book?
Okay, so I got a tweet from a guy who's a blogger. During the launch, he said, hey, I know Seth. Do you know him? I'm like, yes. I mean, I don't know him, but I love his stuff.
He's not. Anyone knows it, yep.
I'll reach out to Seth. I then get a screenshot back from him with Seth saying to him, oh, I've already bought the book. We look through the system, Seth Godin, New York. Seven, I probably shouldn't say how much, but he paid quite a lot for it, US dollar. And I'm like, whoa. So I wrote in the book, dear Seth, like fan mail, you know, thank you for everything and your support. Yep. I'd love to meet you one day. And he wrote back a couple of days later, because we express post it, because I'm like, get that book to him now. I wanted to deliver it in person. But he wrote back, hey, you know, because I said, man, we need your help. We need your advice. And he wrote back a really kind thing saying, you're making the right kind of ruckus, which is his term. He's like, you don't need my help, but happy to connect. And Jared and I actually ended up, when we were in New York, we caught a train out to a small town where he lives, and he picked us up in his Tesla. Wow. We dropped his home office, and we spent like an hour and a half. We went into his wife's bakery. We got some gluten-free, dairy-free snacks. We went into his house.
That's unreal.
And I will never forget that day. And he was, I mean, I listened to all his podcasts. He is the podcast. Like he's, as he's talking, I'm like, I feel like I'm, I was fan.
Was it your Michael Jordan moment?
You know, it was one of, you know, I think the Obama thing was like next level, but the Seth moment, and I'll be honest, in chapter two, we'll talk about this. It was both encouraging, moving, but Seth is a challenging guy. He doesn't catch up with people just to high five him. And he challenged me. Man, did he challenge me.
So you walked away going, oh shit, I don't have answers to a few of the questions that he asked.
Yeah, and the best questions, you shouldn't be able to answer on the spot. And I've learned that some of the greatest mentors I've ever had ask really tough questions. And like, they'll say things that you're like, well, you know, that's a big question, but I'm grateful for it because I'll probably only get an hour and a half with him. Maybe one day I'll get another hour or so. But, like, you know, I just appreciate his honesty and his deep questions and his deep thinking and his willingness to challenge. In fact, we actually did three rounds. So he did a round of hitting me up and Jared up. And then he said, cool, let's grab a drink. He goes, let's go round two. He goes, let's go one more round and let's call it a day. And like, that gives you a window into the rounds, and one day I'll unpack it more, but I just think he was willing to challenge and really he'd ask good questions, and then he challenged me. Good question, challenge, and man, it made me think. But deeply encouraged to have someone like that say, he said that the numbers you guys have got in your books is insane. I heard about it straight away. Well done. So it was so encouraging, so moving and challenging.
Have you met someone else like Seth?
I mean,
was he that unique that he's sort of, well, it's Seth Godin, so I guess how many of those are there in the planet?
Like, honestly, he was Seth Godin. He was that good. He was that unique. And I think I've met other unique people, but never anyone like him. But this is the crazy thing. Like they say, the best public speakers in the world are the ones that are themselves. Yeah. So, like, they don't be anyone else. They don't do anyone else. They just be them, and they nail it. And everyone's like, wow. But they're authentic. They are who they are. Seth is that person. Right. So there's kind of no other like Seth 2.0. There are other great people, but they're different. So,
Well, mate, you've met Barack Obama. You've met Seth Godin. Is there, who's on the list of people to meet? Is there someone that who was it? Who would it be?
You know, there is a guy. So I mentioned Scott Harrison earlier. We during the chapter one launch, on my Instagram, there was this little mention, like from him, this comment. Great launch video for the chapter one launch. Our team are inspired by your work, or we love your creative. And I was like, no, and from that, we've nearly connected. Well, we've connected over email many times, but we've never actually caught up in person. So I was on the East Coast, he was on the West Coast, then we crossed over in America. So we've never actually sat down for coffee. I'm looking forward to that day because he was one of the many people that really inspired me to begin. You know, I think there are a few others, man. Like I've been tracking Malala's story, and her story is amazing. I mean, yeah, but can I also say, and this is important because I think we do hear these big names and you can have a great meeting with someone. But there are stories that just are in people. Like, I don't want to say no name people because they have a name, but like Landon, who I might have told you about, but like he was 12 and he bought 4 copies of Chapter 1 at 12. He'd save up his pocket money. His mum would drive him to a store. He'd buy it. He'd give it to a friend that he thought should go on to change the world. By the time his mum wrote to us, he'd given it to his principal, his teacher, his best friend, and himself had a copy.
That's cool.
When I heard that story, I'm like, man, Landon's insane. And then his mum wrote to us at book number 18. Now he's going on to start his own social ventures and he's dreaming up. Wow. Yeah. Like, this is Landon. Like, he's not Malala, but he, in the same token as Malala, he's just finding his lane. And I love finding people who find their lane and run.
Well, you've certainly crossed a lot of lanes and met a lot of people just in your probably short time here in New Zealand. So, man, hopefully I can we'll be in the same place again sometime soon.
Yeah, man, looking forward to it. Really.
Well, hopefully it'll be a beer and a celebration of you absolutely dominating the New Zealand market. So,
cool, man. Look, honestly, it's been a good couple of weeks, and I hope it keeps going because it gives us a chance to, you know, then show the world what New Zealand did with Thank You.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, thanks so much for your time, mate, and all the best, and we'll catch up soon. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, all right, bro. Dude.
Take it easy. Thanks, mate. See you.
Sweet, bro.
Hey, that's awesome, man. Thank you so much. Thanks very much for listening to my conversation with Daniel Flynn. He is an absolute legend, so please check out Thank You. Do buy the book, Chapter 1. And please do me a massive favor. If you can jump into iTunes, subscribe to my podcast and share it up. I'd really appreciate that. And let's help spread the message of Thank You. And I do have to say, I've got a very exciting second episode coming up. And he is related to me. I'm happy to say that I've finally convinced my brother, Jules Stocker from Dance of the Stars, to come on the show. He will be episode 2. Very exciting. Thanks for listening.